Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan, and the first person I'm going to talk to today is Nicole Daksevich from Modern Handcraft. I am so excited to talk to her because I first started seeing her work when we both were doing some things for ThermoWeb. She was doing projects for them, and I work with them too, and I just love her style, and it's just really fun and amazing, and we are going to learn all about the things that she's doing, including some really, really cool techniques that I've not seen before. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks, Pat. Thanks for having me.
You know, I thought it'd be really fun to get a little backstory. You know, how did you discover quilt making?
Well, with quilting, it started back in around 2010 when I was pregnant with my son. It was kind of that thing where you're in the nesting mode of wanting to do something cute for the nursery, and I couldn't find anything that I liked that I could actually afford. And so I was like, maybe I could just try to make something. So one of the started researching blogs online and discovered modern quilting, and it just totally, I kind of just went from there.
So had you been sewing before, or is just like that whole nesting thing disappointed it?
Well, partly that. I'd made some like really simple pillowcases and things like that. My mom sewed when I was growing up, making dresses and stuff for me. So I kind of had a little bit of idea of how to, you know, thread the machine and some basic things, but nothing as elaborate as a quilt by any means.
It's always so fascinating. So many people are really get inspired to make things for babies, you know, when babies come along. Yeah, I know it's a catalyst for so many people. I want to ask you about your photography. You have a gorgeous photography. Everything you photograph is like stunning.
Thank you.
Do you have an art background or something like that?
I don't. I did a little photography in high school. I was on the annual staff. that was a long time ago, though. mainly just get ideas. You know, my husband's a really good photographer. He's into, like, graphic design. He's an architect. So it kind of stems from ideas from him. And then I just practiced, and the style of my photography kind of evolved a little bit into a little bit more cleaner look. But I really enjoy it. I have a lot of fun taking photos of all the quilts and fabric lines.
You know, I think that's what I really love about your work, Nicole, is how clean-lined it is, because I'm like a clutter girl a lot of times. I'm like, oh, let's stick something else in there.
But oh, I still do that too.
But I love when I look at the photography that grabs me is your kind, where it's cleaner and crisp, and it's so lovely. I just really appreciate it, because it's a lot of work to go do nice photography.
It is. It takes a little bit of time, but I think it.
Okay, I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Let's see if we can fix that. But let me ask you a question. I want to talk a bit about how you go about picking fabric, because I really like your color combinations. What's your process when you go to select fabric for a project?
Well, I usually choose bright colors. It seems to be my thing recently. Really saturated tones. I'll start with a couple and kind of just branch off from there. I'm really into text fabric, like newspaper print. I actually really like a masculine color theory too, just where it's like more blues and grays and black. I'm starting to get a little bit more into adding some pinks and stuff into my quilting, but I think just really anything like super saturated, and I love solid.
You know, I noticed that you really, I mean, do you use many prints, or are you just sort of drawn to the solids right now?
I think I'm more drawn to the solids right now. I love how timeless they are. Don't get me wrong, there are some really great patterns out there right now, fabric lines that I've been hoarding onto. But I think just the solids, you can do so much even just with one color. Like right now I'm working on a project to where I'm using red, a really bright red color, and as the background and as the hexagons on the front and the binding. I think it really makes like a really fun statement just using all one solid color too and just letting the texture speak for the quilt.
Wow. Yeah, that's for me, that would be a challenge. So maybe,
it's maybe a little something. Bit of a challenge right now, but it's a fun challenge.
Well, I want to talk about your method of making hexagon quilts. It is so cool. Can you describe how you started working, what it is that you're doing, and how it happened?
Yeah, so as far as how I do my modern hexie projects, traditionally what you would do with your English paper piecing is you would make your hexagon, and then you would stitch them together. And it's kind of a lengthy process of, you know, having to do those tiny stitches connecting to make a larger piece. With the modern hexie process that I have a tutorial on, what you do is you do your regular hexagon where you wrap your fabric over your paper template. But then I have a way where you press it with an iron to kind of retain the shape. And then you remove the thread in the paper from inside the hexagon. And I use a permanent fabric glue to adhere the hexagon to the quilt backing. And then it's like a fun process of stitching from point to point, where it gives like a really fun texture to the quilt.
Yeah, so that is what I find. And how did you come up with this? Because, you know, how everybody gets very structured. You know, we see something done, so we like the shape, so we make it like that. How did you look at this and think, I'm going to do it really different?
It was honestly out of pure laziness. I was needing to make a pillow for this hexagon blog hop, and I had some of this permanent fabric glue that I used to use when I made pillows, and I used it on the back of felt, and it worked really well. So I was like, well, maybe let's just try this. We'll see if I can glue this down. And then I, the first one I made, I actually did stitching around the edges of the hexagon. Mm-hmm. And so then I tried again with the stitching between from point to point, and it just went from there into several other little mini quilts that I made. So it's kind of an accident.
So I'm curious, like, how much do you turn under? Because you have raw, not raw edges, they're turned under, but you have loose edges. You have, like, little pockets. So like six
I
little
do,
pockets.
Yeah.
So how much are you turning under?
Well, the hexagons that I prefer to use are the one-inch paper hexagon. Mm-hmm. And I'll use a 2.5-inch square of fabric. And that gives me lots of space to turn under. Usually it's about 1/4 inch on the smallest part. Mm-hmm. But then the points from the corners turned over give it a lot more to grab onto when you're making the quilt.
Ah, so do you, the ones that you didn't sew all the way around to lock all the edges down, the ones that have the pockets, are you washing them?
I have washed them before. I've washed a couple of them, and they've held up really well. I think the trick is to making sure the permanent fabric glue that you're using, you do a really fine line around the entire back of the hexagon, mm-hmm. so there's nothing that can come undone. And the permanent fabric glue is really good about keeping those pieces in, where I haven't had anything unravel at all.
Mm-hmm. It is just such an interesting technique. Now, you've actually submitted quilts to shows with this, right?
Yes, I did one recently at this last QuiltCon, and it was a lot of fun. It got, I guess it was well received enough to where it got to go on the traveling show that the QuiltCon, I guess the best of QuiltCon for this last year. So it's in that show.
Okay.
I think it has one more stop to go, and then I'll eventually, I guess, get it back. But yeah, I was so excited. It's actually the first quilt I've entered into a show, so that was a big surprise.
Now, when you're stitching them, you know, you are gluing them down, so that mm-hmm. that's enough then when you're actually quilting the three layers that they don't buckle or shift?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, whenever you're gluing them down, would you have to be pretty careful when you're going over some of the corners because they kind of want to lift up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a video, I guess, just a couple of days ago on Instagram where I kind of showed where I was just kind of zipping over with the quilting foot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just takes a little bit of practice, but once you get the hang of it, it's so fast and it's a lot of fun. It's a really fun project.
It is adorable. It's adorable. You know, what are you working on now? What's sort of your new thing?
Well, right now I'm trying to finish some quilt patterns I've had, you know, sitting on my computer for the last year. I keep getting interrupted with other fun things I want to work on, so it's like a never-ending process. But I've got 4 patterns I'm working on now. They're great beginner patterns using, you know, different shades of solid fabrics. They're great for patterned fabrics as well, but my emphasis is kind of, you know, different color combinations that look nice together. So that's going to be included with the patterns. Hopefully I'll have those done here soon. I'm just making mock-ups of the different sizes right now to make sure everything's accurate.
It's time-consuming, getting all the different parts. Yeah.
It's time-consuming, but you enjoy it because it's like your baby that you're working on. So it's a lot of fun.
This is true. And you had a tip you told me of using the HERA markers. How do you like to use them?
Oh, okay. That was something I wish I had learned about when I first started making the modern hexie, the quilts. Because when I first started making them, I was using, you know, different varieties of fabric pins that would, you know, wear away too quickly. And then I tried a Frixion pin. I'm probably not saying that correctly. And I thought, this is amazing. You know, you mark the lines, you iron it off. But unfortunately, it looks like the lines come back when your quilt gets cold, and it's just a never-ending thing. So I learned the HERA marker. It's a great little tool that you can just line up your ruler, and then you just kind of, the pressing of the tool makes the mark like a crease, and it's fantastic. It's like my favorite tip that I tell everybody about. Use a HERA marker. You never have to worry about ink running out. It's always good.
That's it, Nicole.
And you don't have to worry about... Mm-hmm.
This is so much fun. We're done.
Yeah, thanks.
Out of time.
Oh, no. Okay. Excellent. It was so fun talking to you, and I can't wait to meet you this week at market.
I know. I'll see you there. Thank you, Nicole.
All right.
We'll
see you there.
Right back.
Bye.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I wanted to just be sure you could find Nicole at modernhandcraft.com. I am crazy in love with Melinda Bula's flower quilts. She makes all kinds of different quilts, but the flower ones are the ones that sort of grab my attention and how I got to know her work. And so they're sort of oversized and vibrant and full of life, and color, lots of color. So Melinda's here to talk to me about her flower quilts and a few other things. Hi, Melinda. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Now, you started out in designing out in another industry before you started working with fiber and quilts. What did you do?
Well, I started out, I was a flight attendant first, which has nothing to do with, but sometimes artists have to eat.
Yes.
So that was a good job for a while. But then I started designing wallpaper and fabric. And my mom was an interior designer, so I was always around the design industry. And I just thought I just loved the look. But, you know, wallpaper kind of has a cyclical period in history. Mm. It comes and goes. So I did that for about 10 years. And we had to give up our wallpaper business. And I thought for fun and kind of therapy, while I was looking for a new job, I'd make a quilt again. And that's how I ended up here.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know, I didn't know the wallpaper did that. I guess a lot of things.
Yeah. Just, in fact, it's on its way back up again.
Yay. Yeah, but you're going to stay with fabric this
After
time.
We've all taken the wallpaper out of our house, it's now coming back.
Next to tile. Look at the tile thing.
Next to tile, yes.
Right. Wallpaper and tile. So when you started making quilts, because you'd already been in business as a designer, so that was kind of natural for you to find an avenue to do this as your job?
Right, right.
So
yeah, I started out doing, I think one of the first quilts I did back in the 90s. I started doing quilting when I was 18 and 19. Mm. When I was going to art school and I was working in a fabric store. So I would take items from my fabric job to my art class and I would use materials from the trash can at the fabric store to make my art pieces. So I've always been incorporating art and quilting. But when I stopped doing the wallpaper designing, I decided to join a local quilt guild. And when I got there the first night, I saw one of our first speakers mm-hmm. was Katie Pasquini Moscopitz. And I went, oh, my God, they let artists in here.
Yeah.
But I wanted to learn everything about quilting, just like I had to learn everything about art. I wanted to learn the history, the fabric, every technique. I just started taking a million classes and finding where I fit. So that's how I got into this. And my quilt guild was very supportive.
Oh, I love guilds. I think that they're such an awesome in-person community. You know, we have so
many. They are.
Online communities now, but your in-person community, you can't replace that. It's a
you
great
can't replace
structure.
It. And they would encourage me. They would also show me what I was doing wrong.
Right.
So I knew. And some of the girls in my quilt guild I became very good friends with, and they're the ones who first took me to Houston.
Ah.
And once you see the big Houston show, oh my gosh, the world was open.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's the best show. Just to see the variety and the sheer volume of techniques and differences. What I want to do is you make a lot of different style of quilts. And because
right.
you're years now, it's varied. But I'd like to talk a little bit about particular technique and with your flowers and also,
okay.
you know, the color you're using. Let's talk about color first, because all of your flowers that draw my attention are really vibrant. What do you talk to people, your students, when you're teaching picking color? How do you get them to get on board?
I find that one of the things that frightens most quilters is color.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my belief is we intuitively do have that knowledge. But by the time we get to a certain age, we've forgotten that we have an intuition, which color is an intuition. It's a feeling. It's a discerning between this color and that color. So I try to open their eyes that they still have that, like they were a little child. Mm-hmm. And color really has a big impact in quilting, even subconsciously, because it's the thing a judge looks at first, whether they know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the thing that makes somebody go, yuck, I can't handle walking in this room. Why did she paint her dining room this color? I mean, we have just a big emotional response to color. So I want to bring my students back to show them that they still have that inside of them and how important color is. And I've seen people go to me, talk to me about, I just made this quilt that I labored over for 5 months, and I gave it to my son-in-law, and he hated it. And I was mm-hmm. so hurt. And I thought, well, you know what? Did you ask him what colors he liked?
Right.
Because that does make a big difference. It's a simple thing. You know, maybe you enjoyed the color, but maybe they didn't. So
yeah,
it's
that's
good
a
to
really
get a background.
Good, it's a good tip to sort of talk to the people that you're going to be giving things to be
yes,
sure.
Yes, you work so hard on
yeah,
that. You work so hard on it. So I also have found out that the reason why we have all those UFOs in our cupboards, in our closets mm-hmm. and studios, is probably because we fell out of love with the color.
Ah.
And when you go back and look at them, and my theory is you shouldn't be working on anything if the color doesn't thrill you, because
mm-hmm.
your creativity can't come out if you're working on colors that repulse you.
Yeah.
So my theory is give those quilts away to somebody.
I know.
You know,
and
that
also,
maybe they like those colors, and go get yourself something, because that's when you really pull out your creativity, when you're using colors and working on a theme that you love. And my theory is that creativity is the only thing that we have that doesn't get old. It gets better with age.
Whoa,
so the more you use it, the better it gets.
That's
so,
a perfect thing. Because we won't use
because,
it forever.
exactly. And it's never too late to start.
Now, when somebody's having a pile of fabric there and they're like in your workshop and they're struggling to get the colors they love, what do you tell them to do? Do you have a tip?
I do. I have a little formula for how to present the information to your brain so it can guide you in the right way to mm-hmm. picking colors. What we do when we go to the fabric shop is we will take about 7-8 piles of fabric and we'll pile them all on top of each other. And then the eye and the brain are looking at that going, well, I can't decide. Well, you can't decide because you've just put this color composition in front of the brain where these colors are fighting each other. So mm-hmm. I like to audition one color at a time and give the information, the color information to your brain in the proper manner. And usually when I teach my classes, always when I teach my classes, we do little experiments because what I have my students do is build the flower first. Mm-hmm. And get the petal colors all singing harmonious to each other. Then we audition a background fabric because it's important what color you put that on. And we mm-hmm. go through this little exercise where I change out background colors. And you can hear the girls in the room respond, and they'll go, ooh, that's, yes. ooh, that's terrible. Or, oh, and I just then give them the award that they get. You just felt color.
Yeah,
you just made a decision, and it is a feeling. It sounds simple the way I'm wording it, but it really mm-hmm. is a psychological thing that they've seen in the brain happen when the eyes perceive color interacting with each other.
Hmm. That is a great way, though, for the background, to place it on top of a lot of different ones. And your gut, it's like I tell people, go with your gut.
It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
It's going with your gut. Sometimes I see my students get so involved with the color theory books, which those yeah. are important to know, that mm-hmm. they forget that the right side of the brain, where our feelings about color are, need to be used also.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
they kind of diminish the importance of having the feeling along with the color knowledge. So I try to bring them back to the basics and help them battle their fear of color. It really isn't that scary when you know a few tricks.
Few tricks. That's good. We have like 3 minutes, and I want to get in one other topic because that was fabulous, Melinda. I just think that just is very helpful the way you presented it. I want to talk about your thread painting because you do a lot of that,
yeah.
and you wrote a book about it. Describe what you do with thread painting.
Well, what I do is when I'm making my quilts, I'm painting a painting without using any paint. My fabric becomes my paint, and I cut out my shapes instead of brush my shapes out. Then I come in with my thread, and I'm using my thread like it's a sketch pencil. Mm-hmm. And because I'm doing a fusible fabric, it's sometimes your colors look chunky, but when you go on top of it with your thread, you can smooth and blend and shade those colors together and give this soft look that at the end it kind of looks like a thread-painted tapestry with the color underneath it. So, and you're curving lines, so it kind of directs the viewer where he should look, like in a rose petal. You can't do a straight line in nature. You always have to use a curve. So mm-hmm. showing how to curve and sketch, and I try to have my students visualize that this is the box of crayons that you got for Christmas, mm-hmm. not the 8 crayon box, the 64 color box with the sharpener. And remember how fun that was? So the more
yeah.
colors of thread you have to shade and color, mm-hmm. the better it is.
And now you teach this in workshops, and at your website, people can find
right.
out, you know, type of workshops. But are you doing anything online teaching?
I am. I've just worked with AQS doing they're going to have some online classes, which is going to debut any day now, and it's called iQuilt. And it'll be like, I think the address is iQuilt.com.
Mm-hmm.
But iQuilt's going to have some fabulous quilting classes. And the first one I do is called Taking Your Flower Photo and Turning It Into an Art Quilt. And we walk through how you can make a pattern from your photo and the simple steps to building and making a flower quilt from your own photograph, which is so exciting. I love teaching those. They're usually 5-day retreats when I teach that.
Mm-hmm.
But to have that online where you can stop and start and go back and look at it and redo it, it's going to be really, I think, empowering for the student. And then my second class will be on the Renegade Thread Play, how to add the thread on top of your flower quilt. So
perfect. That's a great
combo. I'm
excited
about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Melinda, this has been so much fun.
Well, thank you. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. Everybody can visit Melinda at MelindaBula.com, where you can see her gallery, her lectures, her workshop. Thank you, Melinda.
You're welcome, Pat. See you in Houston.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am so delighted that the second half of the show, I have Pat Weiss back on from Silver Thimble Quilt. And she has a new book. She's an author of multiple books. She has designed many, many patterns, projects. And we're going to be talking holiday decorating, stitchery, embroidery, and wool. So, Pat, thanks for being here.
Hello, Miss Pat. It's good to be back with you again.
I know. We haven't talked for a little while except for racing by each other at events. So that's all. This is fun. We're going to have a good time.
I know it. It's like sitting down in a comfortable easy chair talking to a friend.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, we are friends,
hello,
so that's good.
Hello, the millions of people out there that are listening to us.
Right. you know, one of the things, Pat, that I want to sort of weave in through our talk is a little bit about decorating, because you are just have a knack. I've been to your home years ago when I taught for your guild, and your home is beautifully decorated, and and your books are always focused on, you know, using the quilts and how they can accent our homes. Is that something you think about when you're designing?
Yes, I do. I actually do, because I don't just make my quilts and stick them in a closet. I bring them out. I change my quilts around seasonally. And of course, at Christmas time, it's a quilt explosion for sure. But, you know, I do like to use my quilts. I don't just put them in a closet and forget about them. I bring them out and shift them around. And as I design, I don't always design, though, with the decor of my home. I like to think about stretching myself a little bit and going with what other people might like. I tend to be a little more traditional in my home, but I don't always design everything that way.
Right. Yeah. Your books have a variety so that people can find things that suit their style and their decorating style. Now, when did you sort of feel like, oh, you wanted to do a book all with Christmas?
I've always wanted to do that. I would like to do another one. I just love it. A couple of years ago, I started doing a few quilts in separate patterns. One of my most popular patterns with a friend of mine, BJ Laird, is Comfort and Joy, and it's a Christmas sampler. And I think a lot of your viewers are probably seeing that out on the market. And then I have several others. And actually, my tree skirt and Comfort and Joy are probably my two best-selling standalone patterns. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that makes me think, well, let's just put it all into a book. But my book took a different twist. It's all handmade. So it stresses the handwork, not as much the piecing. And that's really what I love to do. It's like returning to the womb. It relaxes me. I love everything about handwork. So this book came about like that with Martingale, and they were forward thinking in that regard. And the styling in the book is amazing, and the projects I love a lot. And there's something for everybody in the book. There's easy projects, and there's nothing in there particularly difficult, but some that take a little bit more time. So I think it's got it going on. I really do. I love the handwork. So that was how I started.
I love that there's the variety of sizes. They're all holiday oriented, from embroidery to accents with wool and applique and some hexagons. You even got a really cool hexagon project.
That quilt, the hexagon wreath quilt, is a showstopper. Whenever I show that when I'm out on the road teaching and lecturing, that one always gets a big, you know, you feel like the air's been pulled out of the room when I show it. And it's so easy. So that's one of my favorite projects. But it's the only full quilt I included in the book. The rest of them are smaller to mid-sized projects. But that's the only quilt I put in the book. So it was a lot of fun. Of course, the hexagon craze, everybody's doing hexagons. So, right, or at least it feels that way.
It does. And earlier I talked to Nicole, and she's doing them in a really different way. So it's a hexagon land all around, everywhere. Let's talk about some techniques, because there's you sort of did a good job packing in a lot of different things for this project. So let's first talk about embroidery just by itself, because you have some beautiful stitchery projects. What is your favorite tools to use?
In embroidery, I like to use floss a lot in my embroidery. And for me, it's all about color. Whatever color suits me is is the floss that I would choose. So, and I do pretty much a stem stitch a lot in my embroidery, but I do a little bit of back stitch. Some people do all back stitch, some people do all stem stitch. Back stitch is a little more forgiving. Stem stitch can be a hot mess if it's not done real well, but I do like it a lot. Mm-hmm. And I stitch pretty tightly together. I don't use a hoop. And I talked about that in my book, to hoop or not to hoop. Mm-hmm. That is the question. There's no right or wrong there. You have to do what you're comfortable with. And some people say, oh, you have to use a hoop. And some people say, oh, no, you know. I think it's you have to do what's comfortable for you and make it your own. So, and I like to back. I like
that's
to back
a good
my,
thing to
my...
take. This is take a second. And talk about that with why do people hoop or why do people not hoop? What are the advantages of both?
Well, because I've done both, but I do better making smaller stitches without a hoop. Mm-hmm. But some people like to do a stab stitch where they go up and down, and a hoop is more beneficial there. Now, I've done a lot of reading in my, you know, design career, and mm-hmm. I like to stay up on what other people think. And I have heard it said that if you're doing, say, a stitch that is a stab stitch or simply something that is worked from the front and the back, similar to a French knot, let's take that as an example, mm-hmm. you would want to use a hoop for that. But if you're doing a running stitch or an outline stitch like a back stitch or a stem stitch, no hoop is better in that case because you can pinch your fabric up and make tiny little stitches. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Right, because your fabric, when it's not in a hoop, is more flexible.
Correct. Now, yes. What I do, too, I do like to put a backing on my embroidery mm-hmm. So that any stray threads, I don't do knots. I weave my tails underneath. But I do like to do a backing, and I use a fusible woven interfacing, a real lightweight fusible woven interfacing on the back side of my embroidery, and it kind of prevents any shadowing coming through to the front of any stray threads.
That's a really interesting. So many people will do some sort of a layer behind for that
reason. A
lot
of people use muslin. A lot of people mm-hmm. use muslin mm-hmm. or another cotton. I like the fusible and embroidery, but I don't like a heavy one. I don't want it to stop me from making small stitches. I don't want it gummy or heavy on the back. Actually, my fusible is lighter weight than a muslin. It's almost sheer. It just gives a little bit of zippity-doo-dah to the back of the embroidery.
Of course it does. That's
of course it does, and I love zippity-doo-dah.
I would encourage
your listeners to try it.
I have used a couple different ways. I mean, even some projects batting, you know, because it gives,
you can do
texture.
That too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You would have bigger stitches probably. I don't know. It'd have to be a pretty thin batting. You know, for me, it's all about if you can get your stitches small enough and for embroidery.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like that. And I do like floss a lot. And I like experimenting, and I use specialty flosses like the glitter floss and things like that. I use that a lot.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've ever played with the glitter
metallic floss. I use Wonderfill floss. I use Wonderfill that has, it's called Razzle. There's a Razzle and a Dazzle. And
okay.
I use those two products a lot. And they just have a little metallic woven in and out sporadically throughout the floss, and I like it a lot. And then DMC and some of those companies make a metallic floss. Now, that is a little more fussy to deal with. You really have to make small stitches. You need to deal with shorter amounts of thread because it has a mind of its own, and it kind of goes boing, boing, boing on its own. And you have to be real careful with that, although it's beautiful, and I do use it. But you stitch slow, and you make small stitches, and you use shorter amounts of thread and a bigger eye needle. That usually will do the trick. But I do like the Wonderfill by Wonderfill Company.
Oh,
that
cool.
would be my preferred brand of that. So,
okay.
And that opens up a whole other world in embroidery. Also, in my book, I teach you about tinting cut with crayons. I think you probably saw the projects on that. And
yes.
So I give you the directions for how to do that. My grandmother used to do that. I watched her do that with crayons. Yes, that technique's been around for a long, long time.
I decided to do
it a little heavier. Yeah, it's been around a long time. I decided to do my crayon tinting with a heavier hand, like in my tree skirt, Jolly Holly. It's real heavy. The holly leaves are colored in very dark green, and then we embroidered around the leaves and all. Mm-hmm. And it's really something, and it goes very, very fast, and it has it packs a big wallop from a design standpoint. It really brings your embroidery to another level, I think.
So now, when you're doing the crayoning, are you doing that before or after the embroidery?
Before. I color it in before, and then I stitch around it.
Okay. So how do you keep it tidy? Do you, like, draw it, and then you color in the lines?
Uh-huh. You have to stay in the lines, or you're kind of in trouble. Yeah. This is where you do have to stay in the lines, honey. We have to practice. We have to do our practicing staying in the lines.
No fair.
I know. And I'm definitely a color outside the lines kind of person. But in this case, you got to stay in the lines. And then you can do embroidery around it. Now, you can kind of make up a few little stray arrows if you're using a heavier embroidery or more strands of floss.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to be kind of neat about it. But it goes very fast, and it's very easy. And I give you all the directions for that in my book.
Yeah, because you have to heat set it, right?
Yes, you do. You take a paper towel and go over the top of it, and you keep moving the paper towel until you have no color on the paper towel, and then you know it's done. It's heat set. And it doesn't take that long. You'd be surprised.
Okay.
Lots of fun. Tons of fun. So, and I think you know me. You know that when I write a book, I like to have a book teach you as well as just be a book of patterns. So,
right.
And I think Handmade Christmas Cheer is very much that way. It's got lessons on a lot of things.
All right. You do have a lot of good information. Before we take the break, we have about a minute and a half. So tell me your favorite transfer method for the embroidery designs to the cloth.
Well, I use a light box. And I have a really new toy. I have a light pad, which is a LED light. It's like amazing. You can see it from the surface of the moon. and I trace it that way. And I use Pigma Pen 0.05, kind of a cinnamon brown. I have used the friction pens, which disappear with the heat of the iron. But you have to remember, if you use those, you can't, if you can't iron until you're absolutely done.
Oh, so, right. Yeah.
But I do like the 0.05 Pigma pens. Those are great. And I'll use the cinnamony brown kind of color a lot occasionally. I'll use the pink or the red. And then if I'm doing black, if I'm embroidering on black, and I did some of that in this book, I would have to go to Transfer Ease, you know, a transfer paper, and run that through the computer and stitch it like with that. So it just depends on what you're working on. And, you know, that's the beauty of what we're doing now. We have so many great things out there to choose from. But I use the transfer paper for that, if only if I'm working on black. And black is fine. You can use a black. Clover makes a white marker that washes, I mean, that goes away with the heat of the iron. But the problem with it is you can't see it through your light box.
Yeah, yeah. The black fabrics are just too hard to see that line you're trying
you
to
have
trace.
To use, you have to go to some sort of transfer paper.
And those are really easy to find. They're everywhere. It's been around forever.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They are. They're
okay, so what we're going to do, Pat, is we're going to take a break. And what we're going to come back is I want to talk a bit about wool and how you use it and how you add it to your projects and some things like that, okay?
Okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and our show is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them at Moda Fabrics online. And also, don't miss out on the Moda Bake Shop, where there's tons and tons of great projects. You have to go see them. So I'm talking with Pat Weiss from Silver Thimble Quilt, and we are talking about holidays and stitchery and wool. So, Pat, how long have you've been working with wool? A long time, right?
Long time. Yeah. I've loved it. I've loved it for many, many years. Love it.
Yeah, I think when I met you,
now everybody's going crazy over it. Everybody's into it now.
Well, when I first met you and came in, taught down at your guild in Georgia, you all were using wool then, and that was quite a long time ago.
It was. We were into wool. All of us were doing it in my sewing group, and we were trading and buying wool, and you know that was when wool was a little harder to find, but now it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's great stuff. It's so forgiving and it's fast too.
Yeah, it's instant gratification, isn't it? It's like
it is. And there's different things you can do with it, you know. And I have to say and add at this point that I was into wool for many, many years, and then I have to give credit where credit is due. I took a class from Sue Spargo, and it turned my wool world upside down. Mm-hmm. And I would have to credit her with, you know, just setting me on fire with wool and wool embellishing as well.
Right.
So I think she's terrific. I'm a real fan of hers.
Yeah, so. She is an amazing designer, and her level of detail is incredible. I want to talk now in your book, your holiday book, Handmade Christmas Cheer. You have some adorable stockings, which have wool and cotton on them. When you're doing that, how do you mix that? Do you do like the whole surface, or, you know, what's your kind of rule of thumb?
Well, I kind of let the project speak to me. Mm-hmm. You can mix wool and linen, wool and silk, wool and velvet, wool and cotton, wool and anything you want to do. Don't be afraid to do that, because mixing fabrics and textures just gives everything so much more dimension. So a lot of times I'll do a cotton background, and I might give it a little of that zippity-doo-dah with some of that fabric, that fusible woven interfacing, just to give it a little more strength. Mm-hmm. And then I'll start with a wool, start applying some of the wool motifs out of wool, and I might do a flower, and I might mix the petals. Some of the petals might be wool, some of the petals might be silk, some of the petals might be velvet. I might mix or layer them. So it just depends on the project and what my final look will be. And I tell people in my book, if you're not interested in wool, you can make this stocking and applique it just like you would any other quilt that you were applying or project you were applying. You don't have to do it in wool, but I always give the choice. My friend BJ Laird and I design together, and she'll design hers and I'll design mine, and they'll be completely different. So I'll go for the wool, she'll go for the cotton, and we get a great mixture of both. But I like to mix the wool and the cotton and other fabrics as well. So, you know, that's kind of my thing.
When you're doing the wool applique, are you fusing it or are you leaving it unfused to do your
stitching? I don't use any fusible product on the back of my wool, and I have tried it, but it just wasn't for me. What I do is I trace my patterns with a freezer paper, or what I really like, that Patchwork Place Martingale has some great applique freezer paper. It's nicer than Reynolds freezer paper, although you can use either one. It's got a little more wax on it, so it's a nice product to use. And I will trace it out of that, and then I will cut my wool from my freezer paper templates, and then I just put it on the background, and I pin it down, or I use some very tiny little dots of glue to hold it down, but I do not use a fusible at all. I don't want that to impede the needling. Some people say it does. Some people, it just doesn't work for me. So whatever works for you is great, but I don't fuse it down. And,
so
and frankly,
I
don't want it as stiff. I don't want the stiffness, not just the needling, but I don't want the stiffness. Wool has enough, dimension without anything on it. Behind it. So I didn't need, and I use a little tiny little clover white applique pin, and or I use my little sew line glue stick, or just some little Roxanne's glue base that, you know, and I'll put teeny dots, not a lot. And then I will start stitching it down, and I use a whip stitch and not a blanket stitch.
Okay.
Because I like the whip stitch. I don't want the stitches to make the statement, the bottom line. I want the wool and my design, my appliques that I've drawn and that kind of thing to make the statement. So with the blanket stitch makes more of a statement. The whip stitch is a little quieter. And so it's just the opposite. The running stitch is in the back of the piece, not in the front, whereas on the blanket stitch, it's in the front. So I use a whip stitch. And as far as thread, hands down, when I'm applying my wool, I want wool thread.
Right.
And my favorite wool thread would be Orofil, which is no surprise there, because I fell in love with Orofil when they first debuted at market years ago. I wish you probably know when that happened, but I bought it then and I never looked back. So
their wool thread is called Lana. So if somebody's looking for it, that's the name of it. When you use that, it's a thin thread. Do you double it for the wool?
I have at times. If I feel like the wool that has been felted you know, wool changes from different wools are felted and they feel a little different. If it's real heavy, mm-hmm. I might double it. But again, mm-hmm. I'm doing that whip stitch so you don't see it, and I match the color to the wool.
Right.
And I tried several different brands, but the Lana wool with Orfill was the less fuzzier one.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that a lot, and sometimes I double it. And your readers might be, or your listeners, readers, I'm book-oriented, you can tell. Your listeners might be interested to know, you can use this thread on the sewing machine and
right.
get a great look. You can use it, you have to put it on your machine. It needs to sit off the machine and stitch with a larger eye needle. I think it's mm-hmm. 116/16. Am I right on that?
Sometimes you can do 90. It just depends on your machine and how fast you sew. Sew slower.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. You sew fast. I mean, you sew very slow.
Right.
When you're doing wool through on the machine, and you get a great look. So if it's all about the speed and you're not interested in the hand part of it, you mm-hmm. can do all that on your machine, too. It's possible.
Yeah.
Great. And I would encourage people to try that as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The wool is fun. The different threads that you can use on it because it's fluffy. You know, you can just do some other things. You also have some embellishments I wanted to ask you about. You've been putting rickrack, but you also have some ribbon. How are you adhering those to the project?
I just stitch it down. I just take a little stitch. A little embroidery stitch with some thread that, you know, maybe one strand of floss or something like that, or even just plain old sewing, 50 weight sewing thread, you know, mm-hmm. Orfill sewing thread, and I'll stitch it down. Again, I match that color as close as I can, and mm-hmm. I stitch it down. Sometimes I'll do a couching stitch,
right?
You know, over it and that sort of thing. I do that with the rickrack a lot and with ribbons and things like that. Again, I would also use floss. I might just hold it down on there with my pins or my little dots of glue, and then mm-hmm. I would go over the ribbon with a decorative stitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I have Sue Spargo's book on decorative stitches and several others that I do the decorative stitch on atop the ribbon, which adds another dimension to the design. So mm-hmm. it just keeps going. And that's why this is so interesting to me, because everything changes when you start adding those decorative stitches on top of ribbon or on top of rickrack. Your whole world turns upside down.
And when do you stop, Pat? How do you know when to stop this?
You know, I have a friend who said, so basically this is never Dover, is it? The project is never finished. You just keep adding more beads, more ribbon, more rickrack. And I said, no, there comes a point in time when the piece says, you know, I'm done here. Or mm-hmm. another piece starts screaming at you from the basket of things you want to do, and you say, okay, I'm going to finish this one because it's got enough goodies on it.
Mm-hmm.
And truly, it does talk to you. You'll know when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You'll know when it's done.
Yep.
It just, it's like that, and it's a different world from piecing. I'm not saying that I don't love to sit behind the sewing machine and piece, but this handwork stuff is just, it's like coming back to earth here, and it's relaxing and it's very portable.
Right.
Another thing I do is I wind all my Lana thread on mm-hmm. bobbins.
Oh, really?
And so I have, yes, I do. I wind them on clear bobbins and I have them in several different bobbin cases. I would love to have every single color, but I don't. I have a lot, but not every one. I wind them on bobbins and then I have an empty bobbin case. And when I'm doing a project, I just pull the colors out that I want. Put them in a bobbin case, throw them in my case, and I'm on the go.
Ah, okay.
I can take it wherever I want to go. So I don't have to haul all those spools of thread around.
Yeah, it's very portable.
Yeah, it is. It is great. And the bobbins work great. And I wind them on a little sidewinder machine, and I just wind bobbins. And anytime I get new thread and mm-hmm. new colors of thread, I wind them on bobbins right away.
So we have about a minute or so, maybe a minute and a half here. Just tell me what is your favorite holiday decorating thing. Do you have like one thing that's your favorite to do?
Quilts and use them on tablecloths.
Oh.
Use them as tablecloths. I use quilts as tablecloths. And I have a green and red piece quilt. It's one of the designs I did. It's called Friendship Crossing, and that is on my table, and there's a dough bowl with cranberries on top of it and candles, and it always sets a beautiful table, and I have votives at everybody's place and things like that, things that say, come on in, welcome home, this is where you want to be, and put your feet up and let's celebrate the joy of the season, relax kinds of things. So my quilts are everywhere. They're on the beds. I have holiday quilts. What I do is I put a neutral quilt on every bed, and at the foot of the bed is a holiday quilt. And so I put all the Christmas quilts out at holiday, and then I put the spring quilts out. So they're all the beds have holiday pillow shams and quilts, but I don't have the base of the bed. Never changes. They're always neutral quilts.
Ah, that is a fantastic idea, Pat. I really like that.
Oh, it's great. It's great. You can just fill your home, and you don't, if you have a king size bed, you don't have to make a king size quilt. You can make, you know, something that just folds up at the bottom of the bed, and you still
just
have that holiday
it.
Look.
Toss it artistically.
Yep. Yep. It's easy too. Okay. So I'm coming to your house to see all your quilts on your bed this Christmas.
Okay. I have one bed in my house, so that'll be easy.
Okay. All right.
I have a little house.
It'll be easy then. It'll
very
be easy.
Well, Pat, this has been so much fun, and congratulations on your gorgeous book, Handmade Christmas Cheer. The projects are amazing, and thanks for talking to me about it.
Thanks, Pat, and I hope you have a great market. I know you're probably getting ready to go to market. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show. This was my third visit. You know, I've just enjoyed every minute,
Thank you. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us online, and we'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks.